So welcome everybody to Webinar Wednesday here at Sight and Sound Technology. I've lost count of the weeks, but I think we're on week 8 at this stage. Carl and myself, it's our regular Wednesday afternoon gig. But we're delighted to be back with you again this week to talk about Bristol Braille Technology. And Ed Rogers from Bristol Braille Technology is here, and we're delighted to welcome him as our guest presenter this afternoon, and we'll come back to Ed in a moment. Before we do that, though, a couple of things to tell you. First of all, we're using a webinar platform today on Zoom, which is slightly different to what we've used heretofore. So up to now, we use the meeting interface. The webinar platform is slightly different because when you entered the room, you were muted by default. You can't unmute yourself, but you do have the opportunity to ask questions by typing them in the chat or in the Q&A. And if you want to speak, you can raise your hand and we can unmute you. So just to let you know that that happens. The reason we've switched to using the webinar platform, incidentally, is because when you register using the webinar platform, you don't have to complete the CAPTCHA that was causing so many of you so many problems. So I hope that has made some help for people. So if you want to ask questions, please raise your hand or type in the chat. And Carl will be keeping an eye on that. And we will have plenty of time during the session to stop for questions and answers. And we welcome your questions. It's a really exciting and interesting topic. Second thing is that next week, it's all about ORCAM with Carl. So Carl is running the session next week. And ORCAM, of course, is really interesting wearable tech. And if you thought that ORCAM is just for low vision, well, you might like to think again, because I certainly did think that. And when I saw Carl showing this to one of our colleagues last year, it really made me think a little more about how, as a totally blind person, ORCAM could be useful. So Carl's going to explore all that with us next week. And the week after, just to say to you, and we'll give you more information on this next week, but the week after next, we're going to geek out a little with some music technology and Braille music, and it's going to be a really interesting session. A guest presenter coming along to talk to us about that. So more about that next week. And of course, if you're on the Webinar Wednesday mailing list already, you'll get information on that as well by email. Now, I want to introduce Ed Rogers from Bristol Braille Technology. And I said to Ed just before we started the session that I was going to introduce him by telling a really quick story. And there are two points to the story, I suppose. So Ed and I first heard of Bristol Braille Technology about 6 years ago. And I remember talking to my boss at the time at the National Council for the Blind of Ireland, where I was working, and saying, I've heard about these guys who are doing interesting things with multi-line Braille. And I remember we both kind of said, yeah, sure, we've heard about other guys who are doing things with multi-line Braille and nothing happened. But we said, hang on, these guys are in the UK. They're next door to us here in Ireland. Maybe we should contact them. So I contacted Ed, spoke to him on the phone, had loads of emails between Ed and his colleague, Steph, and myself, and we were arranging for these guys to come over to Ireland, over to Dublin, to present the Canute Braille display to a group. And it was all set up, and there was been emails back and forth. And in all my emails with them, I sort of assumed that these two guys are blind. They have to be, right, because they're working on Braille technology. So Ed and Steph arrived in, flew into Dublin. I felt, God, they're blind. I can't expect them to get a taxi. I'll arrange for someone to meet them. Told the person who was meeting them, these two gentlemen are blind. You'll need to give them a hand. He said, no problem. Ed and Steph arrived to my office, and a colleague of mine brought them in to me. And I said something like, so guys, which of you needs to take an arm? Because we were going downstairs to a different part of the building. And my colleague quietly said to me, they're sighted. And I spent most of the day shocked that two sighted guys were so engaged in Braille and accessibility. And I think it's just one, it's a really nice story. I don't know how coherent I was for the rest of the day, because I couldn't get my head around the fact that these guys were so invested, I suppose, in Braille and technology. So it's on that note that I introduce Ed Rogers, and welcome Ed to the session. Thank you for your time, and we're really looking forward to hearing all about the Canute. So Ed, the floor is yours, sir. You're welcome.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Carl. You missed an important bit out of that story, Stuart, which is... Yet when your man came to pick us up from Dublin Airport, he was parked in the disabled bay to make it easier to bring us from the gate out. And when he saw us, he's like, ah, there's a bit of a problem here. I was expecting one of you to be blind, and I'm not really allowed to be parked in a disabled bay if you're not. So my colleague, Steph, he said, well, Steph, do you mind if you just pretend to be blind and take my elbow?
Oh, I forgot. That's right.
They were doing this absurd little mime all the way through the airport because the guy wanted to be able to get away with parking and dreadful behaviour. Really dreadful.
Great story.
It's a good introduction to the NCBI. Thank you, Stuart. So we've built a multi-line Braille e-reader. It's got 9 lines. Those are 40 cells for each line, which makes 360 cells in total. Now, the cost of this at the moment is £1,895 in the UK, or about $2,500 in America. And it's called Canute 360. And often when people know about the Canute, they're surprised. They thought the 360 was just a sort of a bland sounding marketing term. But no, it's because it's got 9 times more Braille than the average Braille display. So this has been in development for, I think it's 8 years now. We're a not-for-profit company from Bristol in England. The Canute Project has been an open and collaborative effort with associations of Braillists from all around the world, the UK, Ireland, and America, Canada in particular. And we've all got one common goal, which we had even before we started the Canute Project, which was we wanted to make affordable machines that increase the number of people that use Braille. We also wanted to increase the usefulness of Braille. So not just everyone can use Braille for some things, but everyone can use Braille for people who do currently use Braille, get to use it in more useful ways. And so we settled on the idea of a multi-line Braille display, or a multi-line Braille e-reader, as we refer to it. So Canute 360 has hard Braille. That's like signage Braille. It has wider line spacing. It can be said that that makes it easier to learn Braille when you have a slightly wider spacing than normal. It's not double line spacing. It's about 15 millimeters as opposed to embossed Braille, which is about 10 millimeters from the top of one line to the top of the next line. It reads Braille-ready files off SD cards or USB sticks that you put in the side of the machine. Now the BRF file, or Braille ready file, is the common format that's used for sending files to an embosser. So that means the Canute is effectively meant as a drop-in replacement for stacks of Braille paper where that isn't practical or desirable. It's got a preset in for Canute 360 in Duxbury already, which means that Duxbury can output things with the correct page numbers, with the headings and so on and so forth for the 9-line by 40 cell format. You've also got settings in other transcription software, which is the online one. I'll come back to that one in a second.
RoboBraille.
Thank you, that's what I meant, it's RoboBraille. You can insert bookmarks. You can navigate by page number. It's for reading books on the go in really high quality, pre-formatted Braille. So I'm sure a lot of people on here enjoy reading music Braille. Well, you can, if you've got a multi-line display, one with 9 lines, you can read the left and the right hand of a piano piece without having to shuffle up and down and without having to carry 3 cubic feet of paper. We're working with organizations and Braille musicians, Braille using musicians rather, to try and get more presets like the one we talked about in Duxbury so that you can send stuff directly to the Canute so it's formatted perfectly for it. But you can use all pre-formatted BRF files and send them, whether it's Braille music or anything else, and you can scan up and down music files. So Multi-line Braille, we think, is likely to become quite critical for technical subjects because it's certainly a huge advantage. So you could generate a complex equation in UEB Maths or Nemeth, for that matter, and view it on the computer over 9 lines. Now, that means you don't have to remember the column layer. You can scan up and down the column layer and get the entire equation on one display, and without having to go and emboss it. You can even, I mean, for most of our demos, we tend to find that you can put two full equations right next to each other. And the advantages for that for education are quite profound, I think. How about the sciences? Well, we're just beginning to find out how useful that can be as the commutes go out and are used in the scientific subjects. I'll come back later to graphing and other applications like that. But being able to spatially lay Braille out as opposed to just look at it in a linear format has huge advantages. So one of the best uses for a 360 cell display is tables. Now, it has 40 cells, which means, as I mentioned earlier, the reason we got for 40 cells is it takes any BRF formatted document that's meant to be embossed. They don't tend to go over 40 cells. And you could use pre-existing tables, and you'll keep the context of that table. You can fit a couple of columns onto one display, and you could show times tables are a very basic thing, but calendars, that's one of the demos that we like to do. You can show sports results, that's another one we do. You can use things like Duxbury to generate a table from something like an Excel file or a HTML table and then put that onto your commute. And of course you scan up and down like the table as you would normally, as opposed to getting it one table cell at a time. So we've got friends in Britain who program and are Braillists. Well, it's going to be an awful lot easier, and it already is for some of these people who have commutes, to see the structure, whole structure of functions, and even just the log files, being able to scan up and down log files and see how it changes one row to the next on the same column. It can really hugely speed up someone's work. And sometimes having your work sped up is the difference between being able to do the job effectively or not being able to do it at all. And if you ever program in something like Python, where the indentation is important, then it's really important that what the commute does, which is keeping white space identical to what it would be in print or what it would be in embossed Braille, that becomes very critical. So, and of course, Braille for pleasure and literature, poetry, and everything else. I mean, the basic reason that we started developing multi-line Braille is because people want to see paragraphs. They want to see the structure of the thing they're about to read. And it, being able to scan up and down ahead of where you are has huge advantages. Context is important, but you have bullet points. There's the formatting of headings and so on. The ability to respect white space, and therefore it becomes very useful for transcription as well as for people who read it for pleasure or for education. Being able to check that you've got your white space correct, that it's formatted as you expect before you turn out half a tree's worth of Braille paper, and then later it goes onto the paper. All those formatting things are what people currently expect from paper and don't expect from digital Braille. We want to change people's expectations, and we already have changed people's expectations, I believe, that you ought to be able to have that kind of context in maths, in tables. Now, one of the things that I mentioned is we're experimenting with things like graphs and charts, being able to show vectors. We've built very basic scripts which test generating things like floor plans, and very simple bar graphs, even street maps. Now, these aren't things that the commute is designed to do. We certainly wouldn't say that buy this because it has, you look at street maps on it. That's not the point. What I'm getting at is when you can do spatial Braille, you can start to experiment with things, with new ways of doing digital braille. And suddenly you can think about, well, maybe it would be best if I saw this chart as a, as an actual quick send it to the Canute as a graph, and I can watch the sine wave go up and down and that's the kind of experimentation that we're in at the moment. It's already working with the maths and the literature and so on. Now, we actually launched the commercial, the first commercial launch earlier in the year, and then the pandemic happened. So right now we're doing what everyone else is doing, which is waiting to find out what happens. But there are machines out there being used commercially. For years, we've had machines being sent around the world and being tested. One of the things our main focus has been on, and what I hope has made us a bit different from some of those organizations that Stuart was alluding to at the start, where people say they're going to do multi-line braille and then 2 years later they disappear in a puff of patents, is that every time we've made a prototype, however embarrassing or however incomplete it is, we've always sent it out somewhere and had people test it, and that's always formed the basis of what we build next. And we've been doing it for years. I think Stuart's probably propping a door open somewhere with the Canute Mark 9, which I'm very much looking forward to get back at some stage, one of my favorite prototypes. Now that was sent to I think three different places. And all this feedback went back into the design of the machine we've got at the moment. Now I know Carl has got a video from YouTube of the Canute being demonstrated in Site Village, Birmingham, I believe, last year perhaps. But first, I'm just going to run through the device itself. So we've got a website, which is bristolbraille.co.uk. And if you go on there, you can look it up. You can look up how to order, where to order from. So that's bristolbraille.co.uk. But you can also look up who the team is. You can join us on our regular sort of Braillist forum meetings. We sponsor an organization called the Braillists Foundation, who have been instrumental in most of the design for this. So going to look at our website if you want more information about this. But now I'm just going to I'm going to run through the machine itself. I'm just going to hold it up before we see the demo on the video. So this is the box that comes in. It is a box around about 12 inches by about 18-19 inches and about 4 inches thick. It's a cardboard box. That's your carry case for it initially. The Canute itself fits into a rucksack or a 14-inch laptop bag. So the Canute itself is black. It's about 14 inches left to right, from the left side to the right side. It is 7 inches from the front to the back, about an inch and a half thick, just a little under that. Now, the surface of the display is black, and the dots that rise out of it are white to aid ease of sight reading. It's really designed for tactile reading, though. Those of you who have the video up, you can see that all the labels on here are labeled in embossed braille. Down the left-hand side of the display, every line, so there are 9 lines, has a selection button next to it, which is for their modal buttons. They do different things depending on what's on these 9 lines of braille. Next to them, there is a number running from 1 down to 9 and then through to 0. These are also entering in page numbers, or navigating to a page. Down the bottom at the front, we have 3 large thumb buttons on the front of it. This is the central one is the menu button, which takes you to the menu of whatever, if you're in a book, or if you're already in a menu, it just takes you back to the book you're currently reading. This is designed to be a very straightforward and simple plug it in, read books on a SD card, and then when you turn it on again, it returns to the place you're at. This is the back forward button. This is the back button. These again are labeled in braille on the top surface. The device itself is 2.8 kilos, which is about 6 pounds. just under, I believe. There is nothing on the right-hand side on the back, apart from some extremely large white letters. It says Canute on the back background, and that's so that if people take a photo from a distance, it shows up. It was a feature introduced by one of us, a guy that works for us for publicity, which makes it look good for in a distance in a conference hall. So here we have the power socket. This works with, you can actually use any laptop, any universal laptop power adapter. It's sent out with a power adapter, which we obviously recommend that you use it on. And then on the left-hand side of the display, we have a HDMI port output, which and outputs to a monitor. Now, this will do slightly different things depending on which version of the Canute you buy, but it gives a high contrast output of the menu you're in, and we'll go into the more specifics if people ask on the specifics. We have a unused at the moment audio output here, which is unused, but this machine is an open source device. So whether it's the HDMI port, the audio out, any of these others, it can all be reprogrammed by the user themselves should they feel inclined to. And I know there's lots of people who have suggestions of what they'd like to put in the software. You're free to do it. We've open sourced all our software. Now down here is the SD card. This is the library. So you keep a library in here and that's where the main books are read off. So it's a very small port down the bottom. Then we have two USB ports. USB-A. These are for memory sticks, which just can supplement your library on here. So if someone just gives you a BRF on a memory stick, you don't have to swap out the library. You can just pop it in the USB port. We put two on there because we expect there'll be a range of peripherals coming out. And finally, we have a USB-B port, which is otherwise known as the printer port. Now, this is not for the Canute connecting to a printer. This is for the Canute being connected to a computer to act as a display. Now, this is something which the Canute was launched without support for, but as over the last month or so, the support has started to be developed, and we do have alpha quality, which meaning something which is being experimented on at the moment. Very exciting drivers for running the Canute from a PC. And we're really looking forward to expanding the range of uses that could put the Canute to, so you don't necessarily have to use it as a standalone e-reader. Now, Stuart, I think that's my opening spiel completed.
Okay, thanks, Ed. So just to say to people, you can raise your hand if you wish, and I should have mentioned you can press Alt and Y to raise your hand if you're on the PC. You can tap the More button if you're using the Zoom app and press the raise hand. You can type in a question in the Q&A slot or in the chat area, and Carl is doing what he does best and monitoring all that stuff. So Carl, I don't know if we have any raised hands or questions pending at the moment.
I probably will do when I'm sat back down.
Oh, sorry.
That's right. Sorry.
No, by the way, Carl, I liked the your background video. A very impressive collection of knives. I thought that was highly fitting.
That does get brought up quite a few times. Yeah. I'd like to say that's a fake video in the background, but unfortunately I am actually in my kitchen, so I don't have a lot of freedom with kids running around everywhere, so it's a little bit difficult to be able to hide my surroundings at the moment. Yeah. I have got Kiara. Kiara came and asked Stuart, I'm not sure about this one. Kiara, I don't think can see the names of the other attendees.
Okay, sorry, Carl, and I should have explained that. So Kiara, because this is a webinar, so again, it's a slightly different feel to a Zoom session. You can't actually see who else is in the room. That's by design. So yes, there are, I do believe, 66 attendees in this meeting right now, but you're correct, it doesn't show you the names of people. So if you want to speak, if you want to say something, please just raise your hand and Carl will be able to unmute your audio.
I have got one question quickly before I go to the two hands raised.
Okay.
One from Julie Napier, that she's actually commending and saying that's a really good price for so many cells. Now, you can pretty much, Julie likes to buy everything Braille. So there is a fair chance that one of these may be going up to Liverpool very shortly, Ed. So
I got a customer there, Ed.
Yeah, I'll write it there.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks, Julie.
I've got Ala, who's got their hand up. I'm just going to allow you to talk. Bear me 1 second.
So basically, Ala, for everybody, when you're allowed to talk, you just have to click your unmute button and your mic will be active. So you can speak once that happens.
Hi, can you hear me now?
We can hear you, Ala. How are you?
Hello?
Lovely to hear you.
I'm very well, Stuart. Thank you.
Good. It's great to hear you again.
Thank you. Yes, nice to hear you too. The reason for joining this webinar, obviously, is that I'm, as part of my job, I work for Edinburgh College. I'm supporting blind students, and my main concern is that I'm not sure when students are going back to classroom, to the classroom. So I was interested in this product because it might be that this will give a chance to students who are blind and at home and study online, because before they were supported in the classroom, having one-to-one note taker and reader beside them, although students were supported, they were braille readers as well, and also we used JAWS program, but at the same time, during lecture time, they were supported by readers and note takers, and now as classroom moves on to online, so my main concern is how students can read at home. Obviously, can read using JAWS, but this product which you are talking about today, it's not a substitution for JAWS.
No.
Is it like, does it mean that student can read braille format at home having this device at home and needs to connect it to laptop or computer?
You wouldn't necessarily need to have it connected to a laptop or computer. You would have those files sent to you, perhaps by email or something like that. And then you'd put those files onto your Knute using an SD card or a USB stick. Now we're developing the support for it being a display, which means you plug it into your computer and you navigate on the computer. But for any school or any college which has the ability to output pre-formatted high quality braille, then the best thing to do would definitely be to have those files, rather than being embossed and shared around, being sent directly to the student. If the student had a Knute, then they would be able to read it like that. I share your concern about the remote learning aspect of it. I think it was, I understand why everything was shut down so quickly, obviously, but it's not difficult to see ways in which certain people who relied on certain pieces of equipment and assistance won't necessarily be able to take that home with them. Now, as I said, we only launched the Knute at the start of the year, so there were a few machines out there among students, but I wish we'd been able to release this a year earlier, so there's now a thousand of them out there being used by students at home. But there are some, and people can use it like that. One of the side notes, I don't want to just to go deviate too much, Stuart, so I'll try and be brief, but one of the side points that I think is worth noting is there's an awful lot of funding out there at the moment for responses to the COVID-19 crisis. If you are connected to any sort of charitable group, and you know that there are groups of students or anyone else who is being cut off from access to from access to vital equipment, or even just like some mundane things that they didn't realize was going to prevent them from continuing their education, then please look up those funds, because they're designed to try and help. If anyone wants any help with that, I'm more than happy to do so. You can ask on on the Bristol Braille email address. It's ed.rogers@bristolbraille.co.uk.
And that's actually really useful to know, because I've heard of those funds. There is funding available, as Ed says, to try to help people through this really strange time that we find ourselves in. So, Ala, thank you for your question, and really nice to hear you again. Have we any
yeah,
else?
We've got plenty more. Yeah, I'm going to move over to Donal now. Give me 1 second, Donal. Oh, for goodness sake. I get a little bit overexcited with clicking the button and forget there's a little delay.
Yeah, there's a slight delay for muting when we have a large number in the room, but this is Donal.
What happens, as Stuart knows, what happens on our call is when someone gets unmuted, they mute themselves, and then they get muted again, then they unmute. It happens.
So hi, Donal. I think we can hear you.
Hi, Stuart. How are you? Hi, Ed. Thanks very much for a really informative presentation. I learnt an awful lot more about it than I had known, and it certainly can do an awful lot more than I thought initially it could do. Apart, Ed, from it, you know, having the multi-line display, I'm just wondering, is it being designed or has it been designed with primary, post-primary students in mind in terms of maths particularly? Because as you know, it's much more complex when you get into the final years of second level education with maths and the sciences.
Well, we sidestep part of that by making it 40 cells wide and 9 lines deep. Now, the reason for that is because all embossed documents are full within 40 cells, often down to 32 or even 28. And that means you can use existing BRF files. We don't and the reason it's 9 lines is because that splits a 27 line conventional Braille page, or 25 in many countries like America, into just 3 lines. Just 3 pages, which is about as much as we can fit on this space. So, to a certain extent, once we established that, we didn't need to make sure it works specifically with every instance. It can work with Tibetan Braille. I don't know if there's a specific math code for Tibetan Braille, but it would probably work with that too. It takes any sort of input. In terms of how much we thought about education when we were designing it, this was designed for anyone who's interested in Braille, but because we're a small team, we tried to focus on one specific use case, and that specific use case was education. We designed this to be something which is used by people who had not necessarily used a Braille display before, and that's why it's a Braille e-reader. So it's got one of the things I forgot to mention is at the top left of the button, there is a small round button with a H, capitalized H, next to it. And that is the contextual help button. Wherever you are, you press the H button and it gives you a one-page pop-up telling you how to get out of whatever it is you've got yourself into. It's a very simple interface. It's designed for people who are not necessarily familiar with navigating around computers using Braille, even necessarily without people who are used to navigating computers. One more thing to mention on that is the Braille itself. I said it's hard signage Braille. With that, I mean the dots don't bounce up and down. They can't be pushed down like they are in a piezoelectric conventional Braille display. They're actually held solid. You could lean on them with all your force. You're not, please, I mean, if you own a canoe, so don't start doing that. But you can't push the cells down. That means that someone who is learning and is currently in that phase of having to push their fingers rather hard over it and run them back and forth on the dots will find that quite advantageous. We've also had a lot of people saying that the dots feel clearer. They're a bit prouder than normal. So for a learner, that's great. Now, an experienced Braillist will have to remember to use a very light touch on the canoe, in which case it will feel fine. But something crashed in the street outside. Not a car. An experienced Braillist will obviously have to remember to be soft with their fingertips, otherwise it might be hard.
Okay, just one other thing. I was delighted to hear you talk about spatial layout as opposed to linear layout or format, because that's critical, as you know, in terms of the Braille reader. I just wondered whether or not, you know, following on from what you said, GCSE students or A-level students, are there any who have trialed the device, and what, if any, feedback have you got? You can refer to that later if you've a response to it. Secondly, I'm just wondering whether, you know, you envisage at some point in the future it being considered for use in state examinations and GCSE or A-level exams. And I think there was something further as well I just wanted to raise with you. Yeah, the monitor.
Tie a knot on your handkerchief on that one.
No, just one other thing there as well. The print report that you have on it, does that allow a non-Braille reading teacher to look, is there an inbuilt translation program, as is the case with some of the other devices, where a student working in Braille can output in print for a teacher who's not familiar with Braille, or somebody who's teaching Braille. Yeah, and finally, so if you're teaching a student Braille, can you, you know, see on a monitor what the student is producing in Braille? So you have a Braille display in on the monitor as well as maybe a print translation.
So I'll take that. There's a one at a time from the first one.
Yeah, which sure. Is, thanks. Yeah,
it's been tried in quite a lot of different schools. The one that it's been to most often is New College Worcester, and. We have had a lot of feedback. The feedback has varied over the years because we've been trying it in school since 2015, or I think. So some of the feedback has been, it's terrible, you need to change it, and then we change it, and then it gets better. The next bit of feedback is, it's not so terrible. And we get down to the point when we've got a machine which people have found extremely useful. And in terms of whether we'd like it to be used in exams, I wouldn't want to speculate on that at the moment. It would be great to see that happen, but I'm not going to speculate on it.
Okay, granted, thanks.
The third point was, I'll just explain the two ports. So that it's, when it, sorry, when I shouldn't have called it the printer port. USB-B port is the larger one. That's the sort of port you get on the back of a printer.
I understand that, yeah. Yeah.
You can't plug a printer into the Canute. And print from it. Now, the reason you can't do that is because we haven't programmed it to do that. Anyone who is a anyone who wants to delve into the open source code of this, and I wouldn't want someone to buy it on the assumption that someone else is going to do this for them, but if there's there are programmers out there who like to meddle with the Canute firmware, which we very much encourage, it's perfectly possible to install printer drivers and to print something from the Canute. That is not what we've designed it for, but that is the advantage of open source software. You can make it do what you like. So that's not quite answering your question. There is the HDMI port, which shows Braille output, but it doesn't show a transcription of that Braille output. It shows the source. So a BRF file is... a BRF file is semi-readable for someone who doesn't know Braille at all, because a lot of it will be the same, but there will be contractions that are somewhat confusing. So it's certainly useful. We have deliberately not put a transcription engine in there. We didn't feel like we could be responsible for maintaining a transcription engine on the machine. We wanted to only use really high quality pre-formatted Braille. One of the things, of course, that a teacher can do, they could plug a monitor in and they can follow along. The final point that you said was, could they follow along with a student as they write Braille? The Canute itself is not designed for writing Braille onto its own, for reading Braille at the moment. As before, it's an open platform. We may be adding things to it. So it's Braille. Someone can add to it. Once it's used as a display on a computer, you can, of course, write on the computer and it would show up on the display.
Great, thanks very much.
Thanks, Daniel. We've got Carla Savage as well, and then I'll move on to the Q&As in the other box. So Carla, I think I'm going to wait. Unmute. There we go. Carla.
Hey there. I can see a lot of potential with reading Braille for not only educational purposes, but for those people who just want to read books. And I was wondering whether there are any plans to perhaps make it that it could work with something like iPhones or Amazon Fire tablets or that kind of thing, where you can get the translation software already done, so that the Canute could then be used to as a display. I know Ed, you said about it being used with a computer, which is brilliant, but I'm just thinking for on the go, for something like an iPhone or a Fire tablet or something like that, or any other tablet for that matter. Are there any plans in the future that the Canute could work with any of these?
Thank you, Carla. The short answer is one step at a time, and that step naturally leads on to the phones. So the driver that's being developed at the moment is for BRLTTY, which is an underlying driver used by many other screen readers, including phone screen readers. I don't know the specifics. I think iOS has its own software. I think Android may use BRLTTY. I'm afraid I'm not very up to speed on that. But having an open source driver for the Knut is the first step, and applying that to a phone is comparatively less work than just making sure it works on a computer to start with. So it's certainly possible. I'm gonna jump around very slightly because I'm afraid I noticed a question on the Q&A which I think is very closely related to this, which is about you would need Bluetooth usually to connect a device to the Knut and the Knut itself, a phone to the Knut, and the Knut itself does not have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. I'm allergic to developing in wireless communication onto these things. It always causes troubles. So it is a wired device, and you would wire it into your phone. That's one thing to note. It's perfectly possible that someone could develop a Bluetooth module that you can add on and use one of the peripheral ports for that. We would expect Android would be one of the first ones to be supported in that instance. Finally, this is a small aside and possibly a bit of a distraction, but if you've got an Android up until relatively recently, when you plugged an Android phone into your computer using the micro USB port on the bottom, it would show up as a USB stick. I've often done demonstrations with my old Android, which had BRF files on it because people had emailed them to me. I plugged it into the Knut and those showed up on the Knut and I could then navigate between them.
That's interesting.
That's not a deliberate function. That's purely because some of those phones think they are USB sticks when they're plugged in.
Right. So some tablets might even be able to do that as well.
I think these days Android is moving away from that onto a supremely less useful system, which is the normal way for these things to develop.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your question.
Right. Next one. One second. Let me just remove that hand. Dun, dun, dun. We've got, I'm just going to go to a quick question. We've got Claudia. Is there instructions in the box?
Yes. Let me see if I left them in this box or whether I've hidden them somewhere about the house. So the box opens up like so. It's sort of leaves up the front, and then you have two compartments inside it. On the very top, the first thing that you'll find is a quick start guide in Braille. This is 13 by 11 inch sheets of Braille. It gives you a basic start of how to get going on the machine, and the most important thing it does is it tells you how to find the help button, of course, on the device itself. So once you get started, you can then navigate around by the help file itself. Now, when you receive one of these, we have a Braille version of the user guide, which you will easily be sent by your distributor, or you can get it directly from us. We can send you one. We decided not to put the entire user guide in as Braille in order for it to not weigh twice as much in the post. So we also have a print user guide in there as well. So that's four different forms of guides for getting you started. You've got the Braille Quick Start. There is the Braille full user manual, and there is the context help wherever you are in the machine, and there's a print manual as well.
Right, yep. That's that. Hang on 2 seconds. What have we got? Trevor Lyons, sorry I joined late. I presume these devices are available for sale, and what is the euro price for Ireland?
So the short answer to that is if you go on our website, bristolbraille.co.uk/order.htm, just go on the website and there's a link at the top for orders and it will show our current distributors. And any of those distributors might be prepared to send it to you. I don't think we have a distributor who lists the price in euros at the moment, but we have distributors in the UK, in America. So just go and have a look and find out what you like.
I think it works out about 2,200 euro if you do it at the exchange rate we use.
I haven't checked recently, but that might be right.
Something like that, yeah.
It's not far it's off.
Splitting give or take the difference with dollars, isn't it?
Yeah, a few euro either way, but not a massive difference.
Yeah, and so check on our website and look for our current distribution options. And also, of course, we're adding more distributors all the time.
I was just about to say that. So just watch this space in terms of Ireland and euro.
Exactly, Stuart.
that's all we can say now.
Well, we're in a bit of a pause. So there's not a huge amount of activity going on in the industry at this exact moment in time. But you know, things will start to pick up again in the near future.
I think you've already answered the one from Monique, haven't you, about the internal storage or using a USB or SD card?
Let me just read the question. So I'm going to ask the question about the one you saw in Child Vision, Monique. Yes, it would have been vast back then. It was a 17-inch by 18-inch prototype. It weighed slightly less than a Ford Mondeo. it's a little bit smaller now. You can hold it and move it around. You can put it in your rucksack. You can put it in a briefcase. Like I said, it's about 2.8 kilograms, and it's 7 inches from the front to back and 14 inches from left to right. Does it have internal storage? It reads it from the SD card. It does have some internal storage, but that's purely used for updates to the operating system itself. That's why we're encouraging people to keep an SD card in there with their own personal library on it.
All right. Go on.
And what is its capacity? Oh, well, it can take any SD card size, I think up to 128 gigabytes, but you don't need anything more than about 16 gigabytes for BOF files. I mean, you don't need more than half a gigabyte usually.
Okay, right, brilliant.
That one. There's another one quickly. Alison, I can answer this one for you because I found it already. There's a demo video on YouTube. If you just go into the search bar on YouTube and just type in Knut Braille, it'll bring up, I believe, which is pretty much your only video at the moment, isn't it, Ed?
Yeah, we're not very hot on visual mediums, to be honest. Yes, that's possibly our only video. There's a few old ones of there. So do we have a way of sharing it on the chat, Carl and Stuart?
We can probably put the link in the chat.
That might be perhaps. An
idea. Yeah, I'll get it for you now. Hang on.
We do have some old videos, including the Ford Mondeo one.
I've just put the one in that we're about to show in a minute, which is about 3.5 minutes long, which Edward referred to. Is the live demo from Site Village. So that link's actually in there now, so you guys can access that if you want to have a look in a minute.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
We're going to be doing some more. We have a newsletter as well, so if anyone wants to hear more about more demos that we might be doing about prices like the Euro price, conversations between us and our distributor and so on about new features coming on. If you go onto our website, you can join our newsletter and you'll hear all of that.
Right. I'm just going to nip. Hold on, Claudia. I'll get to you in a second. And Alison, I'm just going to go to Chris Brady. He's got his hand up. Bear me 1 second. Oh, come on, machine. So slow.
While you're doing that, Carl, I've just received a question on email, actually, from a guy called David Stevenson. He says, sorry, I joined webinar late. My question is, do you provide any personal training once the deadlock is over? So I suppose, Ed, maybe he's asking, do Bristol Braille provide training with the machine, or is there a cost, or how does that work?
Right. Hello.
Hold on just one second, Chris.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. So the question from David Stevenson is there any training available in the device?
Yes, that will. That's something we were thinking about when everything shut down. So, yes, in some form, I'm sure. But if you email us about those questions, then we'll get back to you as we increase our services available. It'd be something like Stuart said, people can pave to get some more training. And of course, depending on your distributor in the UK or wherever it is, then that distributor is going to want to provide you support as well.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, thanks, David. And Chris, you're unmuted, so you can speak now if you wish.
Yes, thanks very much, Stuart. And thanks very much for the presentation. Alan, is it? Yeah.
Ed.
Or Ed. There's one question I'd like to know is, if you've got a Braille file on and you're reading something in on the Canute, can you switch from uncontracted Braille to contracted Braille?
That's the question about switching from contracted to uncontracted. Before I answer that, I'm just going to go back to a previous question I said about the chaining, which I think is worth adding something I thought about, which is that the Canutes themselves do not need a huge amount of training on it. So obviously, if someone wants to have training for it, then we're very much like, you know, them to receive that. But they are designed so that people should be able to use them without having to go through a training procedure. That is the purpose of the step-by-step guide, walking people into using it. In terms of switching between contracted and uncontracted Braille, Chris, because the Canute accepts Braille-ready files and it works with Braille-ready files, those don't know what the contractions are. The Canute can take anything. So this is what I was saying about it can take contracted, uncontracted, Tibetan, Korean, whatever it is.
I see. So
it's dumb of the when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah. So if, for example, you got stuff and it had been written in Spanish or Italian or something, you'd see it in the Italian or Spanish Braille.
Yes, as long as they're using.
Or if it was in contracted English Braille, it would be in contracted English. And if it was in uncontracted, it would be the same. Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's good. It does seem a very attractive piece of equipment though for reading. And getting the print word into an accessible format that you can read.
It's also, some people have found it a bit easier to read on. Not necessarily than print, but the dots are very prominent and very easy to read, and some people do find that. I mean, once you get used to the fact that you don't need to press as hard.
Well, I teach people...
Going back a little bit more to about switching between contracted and uncontracted. So we don't have any transcription on it at all. But we do have menus which can be switched between contracted and uncontracted English Braille, and you can add language packs onto it, which we'll be doing through upgrades and when they become available. And if I drop out, I've just had a notice saying my internet connection is unstable. Hopefully I won't drop out.
You can swap out the
menus can be in contracted or uncontracted.
And if you're going to, when you're going to update the software, would you send out a card to somebody and they'd put it in the Canute and it would actually install the new firmware or what?
That would depend on how the user can do it themselves by visiting our website. And and we have a link there which gives someone a link to the latest firmware. And you download that as a zip file, put that on a USB stick, I think it's USB stick or an SD card, put that in the Canute, turn the Canute back on again, and then it will do its thing for something up to 20 minutes.
I see. It actually reads the program and installs itself. Oh, that's good.
It's one of those ones where as long as it's got a script with the right name on it, it'll install that. Now, for some people, they may wish their distributor to support them with that. Again, that's one of those support packages things for between the distributor and the customer.
That's very good. That is really good. Yes. Thanks very much for your answers to the questions I've just asked. Thank you, Chris. Thanks.
All right, Chris. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks for your questions. Brilliant.
Right. We've just got, hang on 2 seconds. So Claudia says, you can read that one, Ed.
There's no case for it. Don't we think the Canute needs some sort of protection from dust? So there isn't a case for it yet, but you can. We're not particularly good at finding ways of charging large markups on on sort of peripheral items yet. We're working on it. But you can use any laptop carry case to put this in. It's any 14-inch laptop case will fit this. So it's you're encouraged to buy any such case. For example, one of those rucksacks with a built-in laptop section. In terms of protection from dust, we did worry about that early on. The machines are very resilient to dust. In fact, we once had someone drop a crisp into it and it spat the crisp back out of them when it refreshed that line. It's quite a robust mechanism. Now, again, that's not something I encourage until like leaning on the braille. Please don't put crisps in it. It will stop working. But it will work with a little bit of dust in the air. We will be looking into making dust covers for this as well, and possibly a sort of a permanent cover that you can leave over it, like a sort of film.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much, Claudia, for your question.
Right, we've got Alison Bailey. When do you anticipate the graph function to go live?
Well, what I was referring to at the time was experiments we're doing where you can write scripts on your computer, where one can. We have built scripts, which means that you can create graphs. You can do this using PerkyDuck or Duxbury as well, or any other. You can even just do it in a text editor and output it as a BRF file. And you try that on the Knute. So it doesn't need any new functionality on the Knute to look at graphs. It just needs the graphs to be generated on the computer itself. Now those tools for looking at something as a graph ready for being seen on the Knute are obviously things that they do require development, and we're working on that. But that's not the Knute itself doesn't need any addition to be able to look at any sorts of BRFs with graphs in. Excuse me. In fact, there's a related question for that. Do you mind if I move on to that one, Carl, about the line spacing?
Yeah, sure. Work away, Ed.
So the question is, having seen the device, the space between the device has a gap, between lines has a gap. So is it possible to show actual graphics on the device? Now, it does have a gap. Conventional paper braille has 10 millimeters gap from dot one to dot one, from one line to the other. This has 15 millimeters, so it's 50% larger spacing between lines. Now, that does mean that you can't show a continuous line of dots as you might be able to emboss on an index or something like that. That's not what the Knute's designed for. I'm not personally very interested in doing that sort of graphing or graphics on the Knute. What we're talking about for graphics is where you use the spatial layout of a braille page, and you can sort of show a line of A's moving up and down, for example, to show a sine wave. Now, that's not high resolution as such, but because it has, if you could then have another line of X's running alongside it, you can easily distinguish which is which, and you can flick back and forwards to a description page in Braille. So we're talking about using spatial Braille to demonstrate, to really play on the benefits of Braille. We're not talking about doing bitmap graphics in any sense.
Okay, thank you very much for that question. Just to remind people again, if you do want to speak or ask a question, you can raise your hand with Alt and Y, or you can type in the Q&A section, and Carl and Ed are both looking at that. How are we doing, Carl?
Should I pick another one from the question and Carl, answer?
Please, yeah.
Okay, so does it support Slavic languages and accents which aren't in the English language, of course? Yes, it supports any language which can be outputted as a BRF file. Now, these BRF files need to be outputted using the US ASCII code, that has no limit on which languages can use that. Now, that means that it can support Slavic languages, it can support Latin languages and anything else. It does depend on the transcription software you're using, whether it outputs in the correct BOF format.
Okay, so I suppose the key thing is to have a BRF file formatted correctly that will
which of course is critical for embossing and everything else as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Right, where are we up to? I had to just vanish and reprimand a small child.
Okay.
Did you just do the Slavic language?
We did.
That's fine. Now you've got Kikwang. I went on your website and saw the appearance of the device, but I have found some gaps between the lines. Is it possible to show some actual graphics of the device?
Recap very briefly. We're not looking at doing any sort of bitmap graphics on it, but representing some sort of vectors or graphs or charts is something you can do. You can use spatial braille to represent that.
Okay.
And then obviously you've got does the unit use battery power? If so, how long is the estimated time per charge for average use?
This is designed as a desktop device, which means that you can carry it around, but you're not expected to use it on the go as such. So this is a device for using on the desk or on your table or on your lap. And it's plugged into the mains. Now we've run this off batteries. You can buy batteries from Amazon, off the shelf batteries that are like those battery packs for laptops and so on, which will run off those as well. But we haven't designed any built-in battery yet because we're focusing on making a really good desktop device first. We may design a battery pack add-on, but you know we have to concentrate on the important things first, which is getting this thing out to as many people as need it.
Okay, and then there's Claudia. Can you type or just read on it? I think you have covered that part. I don't know whether that came in after.
I'll just recap for Claudia's sake then. You can read on it. It's not designed for typing on it. It hasn't got a Perkins or a QWERTY keyboard on it. Once the Knut is used as a display, which like I said is not something which is released with that functionality, but it's being developed as we go by other developers, then of course you can write on your computer, and as it's updated it will change on the Knut itself. The Knut is designed though for reading. It's not an instantaneous refresh. It refreshes one line at a time. It takes a second to refresh a line, then it refreshes the next line. So this isn't a device you're ever going to use for sort of quickly navigating around your desktop. This is something for reading high quality braille, and it's reading anything that you would otherwise emboss. If you can emboss it, then you can read it on the Knut.
Brilliant. I'm just going to unmute Philip Troll. He's got a question for you. Bear me one second. Modern technology. Isn't it grand? Come on.
Well, this is new to all of us as of about 2 months ago.
Yeah, it is.
I think I've once received a Zoom invite and told them to go use Skype or something.
Do you know what? You wouldn't have minded having shares in this company prior to all this happening anyway.
Oh, dear.
That is very true.
I think you'd be a very rich person at this moment in time.
I feel sorry for Skype. I feel even sorry for Google Hangouts. No one's using that, even now.
Right, I have an issue. It won't actually.
While you're trying to get Philip on... What's it? Should I answer Solomon?
Yeah,
yes, and, you can. Yeah, of course you can.
Philip, you may have to unmute yourself. Sometimes we can tick the unmute, but then you're prompted to unmute yourself. So that could be what's going on.
So is there any plans to make it a note taker? Well, the display technology itself is very versatile. So we may be looking at making another device using the same technology with a more advanced feature set. Right now we're focusing on getting this device out, which is as affordable as we can possibly make it. As you might be able to note from the price, we're not, we're trying to keep the price as low as possible. A more featureful note taker is something that certainly interests a lot of people, but right now one thing at a time.
Okay.
Philip.
I've unmuted Philip now, if you want to ask your question, Philip. Hello.
Hi, Philip. Oh, your audio is breaking up.
I'm not the only one.
With right, I'm just going to mute you for a minute again, Philip, just to, he says famous last words, and I can't actually do that again. we do have another question from Theo. Let's see if yours unmutes a little bit quicker, Theo.
Well, can you set bookmarks on the Canute or not?
Is that Theo from, is it Tactile News?
Yes.
Yes, it's Theo Holwood who did the Tactile Times podcast for Sight and Sound a few weeks ago.
Tactile Times.
Well, can you set bookmarks on the Canute or not?
Yes, you can. So what you do is when you're navigating around the BRF document on your Canute, when you're on any given page, you can press, I think it's button, it's one of the buttons down the side. I can't remember off the top of my head. And that sets a bookmark for that book. What it does then, this is a going into the technical side, but it's useful for people who may be using a Canute for more than one person, is it writes that, it keeps the BRF on the SD card, and then it writes another file next to it with a similar name, but dot bookmarks at the end, and it puts the page number into that bookmarks file.
If you put it into like Notepad on the computer, would you be able to use that file, or would it be like locked?
Exactly.
Would it be for the Canute only?
It's plain text file, and the entire purpose of it is someone, because BRF is not a marked up format, it's not rich text. It gives the Canute no idea of where chapter headings are and so on and so forth. You can distribute files with previously made bookmarks, so you can put it on your put the file on your Canute, generate a bookmark for every new chapter, and then you can distribute that file with the original BRF, or you could just write it yourself.
So what does that list? Does that just list the page numbers one per line, or how does it work?
When you then go into the Navigator bookmark menu, then the top line of the display, of the nine lines, the first one will say this is the bookmark menu, and then the other eight will give you the first eight bookmark pages. It will give you the page number on the right hand side, and on the left hand side it will be a quote from the top line of that page. So it'll find the first string of text on that page, and it will quote that for you. So obviously it works best if the chapter heading is at the top of the page, as you would expect it to be.
And this question I've already asked in the Q&A dialogue, but could you sort of convert iBooks or things like that to be able to read them on the Canute, or convert EPUB files and stuff like that, or not?
You can certainly convert EPUB files. That's an open format, and I know that can be converted using any number
iBooks,
of...
Then.
There is some excellent software which can convert all sorts of things, and I've forgotten what it's called now. Calibre, I think it is good for converting between otherwise inaccessible or proprietary formatted ebook files. Of course, most files can then be put into something like RoboBraille or Duxbury.
Thanks, you.
Right, that is, I think all the questions for the moment. Do you want me to bump on and play this? Your video.
Yes, why not? I think we should be. It's going to be a little stuttery, isn't it, over the connection for everyone? But it'll give people an idea of what it's like in use. So this is from one of the site villages around about a year ago, and this is a colleague, Liam, demonstrating it to, I think, one or two people.
All right, here we go. I haven't started it right from the. I'll tell you what. Let's just take it back.
So on the table in front of me, Kevin, is the Canute 360, which is a 9-line, 360-cell Braille e-reader. Now, at the moment, you're looking at the English County Cricket Table, which was a file made by one of my colleagues. So this shows us a real advantage of multi-line Braille, is that you can look at tables, you can look at maths, and you have that context intact.
That's great.
So can you feel just to the left of where the Braille display is?
Yep.
The triangular
that's
about halfway between Bristol.
Just to the right of.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, just to the left of, in between the numbers and the railway. It's a long day.
These ones here.
Yep. Yep. So you should feel 9 triangular buttons.
Yeah.
If you find the 9th one.
Yeah.
Did you want to see?
There you go. Press it. So now you've gone to the library menu. So it refreshes one line at a time off the top. And this displays all the files that are currently on the USB stick. So you can choose a file by pressing the triangular line select button, which is immediately to the left of it, that button you pressed before.
Right, so for example, if I wanted to look at O2 Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So let's just do a little bit of Harry Potter.
There you go, and now you're reading Harry Potter.
And it loads it up straight away. Oh, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. Contents to find the start.
So I'm afraid you might be in the copyright notices, which are very interesting.
How do I skip forward?
So, do you see there's 3 buttons on the front panel?
Oh, here? So here.
So they're labelled in Braille on the top, but they're actually just on the front surface.
This bit down here?
Up a bit, yeah. Do you feel with your thumbs? They sort of contribute right where your thumbs are.
Hello there.
There you go. So if you press the forward button, which is the furthest right button, if you press that, there you go, you move forward one page.
Okay.
To move backwards a page, you'd use the back button.
So then that brings it up.
Yeah, exactly.
How quickly I can kind of quickly move it forward?
So if you hold it down and move forward 5 pages, if you can press it as soon as you want, it will just refresh it.
Okay, and then how does it work in terms of what you can connect to it? So you can connect to USB?
Sure, yeah, so it's at the moment it's a standalone reader. It's a bit like a Kindle or an e-reader would be, in that you load files onto a USB stick and then put the USB stick or SD card into the Knute, so it's not connected to anything.
And what files are you
taking? BRF format or PEF format or BRL format. So you can translate a Word document or a PDF document or any other sort of document into them. You can use software like Duxbury, which is paid for, or Braille Blaster, which is free. There's also a service online called RoboBraille, www.robobraille.org, which is made by a Danish company called Sensus. You can upload a file to them. You can select Knute 360 as your format, so it will format it correctly for you, and they'll email you a BRF into your inbox within an hour of any file you want. So that's the way we often do it. It's the easiest. The easiest way.
And how can people get hold of the Knute?
So we're starting to accept pre-orders now. If you go to www.bristolbraille.co.uk, there's more information on the website. We're accepting pre-orders for £1,695, excluding VAT, and that's for delivery by the 31st of October this year.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
Brilliant. Very good.
Muted myself. There we go.
Right. Well, I apologise sincerely for anyone else who's feeling seasick after that. In my defence, we didn't actually film that ourselves. That was someone doing some shooting of us at a site village. That was prior to the initial launch, where we had a discounted offer for someone who did an early order before October. And that was my colleague Liam.
Excellent.
Explaining
any
that.
Anything else
you could hear. I was going to say, in the background, you could hear some members of the Braillist Foundation, who we have worked with quite closely, who always share the stand with us, and who have been involved in the design of the Knute.
And maybe, Ed, I don't know, do you want to give their contact details? Because they're a very lively group, and they're doing all sorts of great things at the moment during the lockdown.
Well, yeah, I think, and Stuart has been good enough to come along to some of the Braillists' webinars. Now, this is not Knute related, but the Braillists, so this is Braillists, plural, .org. Now, Braillists.org, on there you can find a link, so it's Braillists.org/stay safe, and they're running 3 times a week webinars on various pieces of information. I think we've got an interview with Brian McDonald from National Braille Press on Friday. It runs at 6 p.m. In the evening. Now, this is just a charity which is doing this to try and help people in the community who were initially without some information that they required. We're also doing Braille lessons.
I'm just saying, you can also
touch up
on their Braille. To get the webinar, they're doing, they'll do it, I'm going to help you get up to the website, they will email you when they're taking their school schedule and stuff.
Thank you, Sophia. Okay. I think the line broke up a little bit there, but what I got there was a newsletter you can sign up to.
Yes, so you can subscribe to the newsletter on the website. There's a link, and then you can get emails when they change their call schedule and stuff, so you don't need to keep looking, going back to the website.
Now, this is something, a format that I'm, you know, it's exciting to be on the, to be on your webinar, Stuart, to see what happens when you've, you know, when you're running a really big webinar.
Yeah.
So we're just aspiring to make some, to do some
stuff. And it is slightly different to running a meeting, of course, because it's a slightly different interface and a different experience for the attendees as well.
Yeah. I really like the way that you're moderating and setting this up. It works really nicely.
Well, it's all thanks to Carl doing the heavy lifting of the moderation bit. Any more in the chat, Carl, or hands raised that anybody?
No, we had a thank you from Ed Bates, who left a while ago, just to say thanks to everyone. And I've got to leave, but will you update the website so I can check and catch up on the rest another time?
Yeah, and I had an email from Ed Bates, actually, and I think and he was looking forward to the event. So, yeah, we will be putting this session on our podcast page. The audio from the session will go on the podcast, I hope, by tomorrow or certainly Friday at the latest. And keep an eye on our social media, and we'll post on social media once it's up.
Okay. And one of the things I forgot to mention in a previous answer to a previous question in the Q&A, the person who saw the very large prototype in Child Vision can now go back to Child Vision once it's open, of course. There is a smaller one there now with the current latest device.
Yeah, and I was just the one thing I was going to add was that I've been lucky, and I really use that word strongly, lucky enough to see this device kind of evolve over, I think, 6 years or so. And
I think it was 2014, wasn't it?
2014, there you go. So it's been an incredible sort of journey to watch that and to watch how you guys have really kind of, you know, responded to feedback and changed the look and feel of the device. And when we saw it very first day, that time Ed came over to Dublin with Steph, his colleague, it was in a suitcase with lots of wires, and it was really interesting.
This is a stripped out briefcase. With wires that literally stuck out the side. It had an actual timer in it, a countdown clock thing, and what looked very much like an ignition switch. I think they must have been asleep in the airport.
I'm amazed you got through security, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you were very polite about it.
Oh, it was really good. So, Ed, thank you so much for giving us your time today. I think it's been a really interesting webinar. Thanks, as always, to Carl. And thank you everybody for your attendance today. Remember, next week we're back to talk about OrCam with Carl, all about OrCam, My Reader and My Eye. And of course, we do have a special on OrCam at the moment while stocks last. There is a reduction on those. And there is also, remember, significant reductions ongoing across JAWS and Zoom Text and Fusion and some of our focus displays. So, and indeed the Polaris as well. So go on to the website, sightandsound.co.uk, if you want to know more about that, or give us a call in Northampton. And I think that's it. Until next week, from everybody at Sight and Sound, thanks very much. And we look forward to catching up with you same time next Wednesday. Thank you.